Sure.
I'll take notes and stuff and just, you know, we'll lose something or won't get it right or whatever.
Or can't read your writing, that's my problem.
that can happen. Well, we're having an interview with Odge today. Now, is your name really Olive?
Olive is my baptismal name.
Olive is your baptismal name.
Yes.
Okay, I had to ask that because my cousin, she still refers to you as Olive, and so it took me a while. I was going, who are you talking about?
Yeah.
Oh, it's Odge. Okay, all right. She goes, Odge? So that
has to be an older member then of the community, because my mother, while she was alive, always, she loved the name Olive, which obviously that's why she named me that. I never liked it from day one, because of course as soon as I got to school, everybody asked me where Popeye was.
Oh no, it was during that time.
So.
Well, my grandmother's name was Olive.
Oh.
So, and
it's not a usual name.
Yeah, and she's a little older than you, and at that time, the name Olive and Crystal and all those names were very popular.
Sure.
So,
sure.
Even my name June, because she named me June.
Yeah.
So, were you born here in Sherwood? Or?
No, I was born in Eastern Oregon, in a little town called Echo. But my folks moved here, you know, in the 30s.
Oh.
And so we've been here for a long time. And we all went to school here, with the exception of my oldest sisters and brothers, and they'd already been in school and out of school and gone to work, so. But it's basically, you know, Sherwood's my hometown.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you've been here since the 30s.
Right.
Yeah. And that to me is interesting because, like, Joanna Owens, mm-hmm. she's from Eastern Oregon.
Oh.
And originally, Jerry Harrington, who's really my mother's cousin, but we call her my aunt.
Oh, she's so sweet.
She's from Eastern Oregon. My mother was from Eastern Oregon.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, and so I know a lot of folks from basically, I guess, from the 30s through the 50s,
mm-hmm.
came from Eastern Oregon to this area. And so, for, you know, mostly it had to do with the Depression. A lot of it did. And so that's kind of interesting to me. Okay. So, you know, you've been here since the 30s. What kind of highlights of things that you can remember about Sherwood in the 30s?
I can't remember much about the 30s, the 40s more, but I think what happened, what I thought was so interesting about growing up here then, the war, you know, you didn't pay much attention to that because we were too young, but the kids, my oldest brother was in the war, several of them, and but what I remember about Sherwood at that time was that we just did a lot of community things, but we still do, mm-hmm. but the things that we did then were a little more personal and a little more just Sherwood things. They weren't particularly, they didn't try to attract people from out of town. It was, you know, the Legion always had a parade on the 4th of July, always. Big potlucks in the park afterwards. Easter was the whole town went, if it was raining, they went to one of the schools and were inside celebrating, and always ended with big potlucks. If it was nice, we all went up on the hill, just up on Washington Hill, where actually Snyder Park is now. Used to be our outdoor Easter services. But it was a perfect place for kids to grow up because there were woods and streams and, you know, you could go anywhere and be perfectly safe. Your mothers didn't worry about you. All the kids played games in the evening and they closed off. In the winter, they would close off Washington Street clear up around the end, because we'd had a lot more snow in those days than we've had now. And kids would slide all the way from clear up at the, around the corridor all the way to see if they could go all the way across the railroad tracks.
Whoa.
And then the parents would build a big bonfire somewhere out there. And you'd have, you know, hot dogs and toast marshmallows. And it was just a real family town, and everybody kind of looked after each other. And all the parents and the grown-ups looked after the kids, which is sad to say, not the way it is anymore. I always tell people this because I always think it's so typical of how life was in those days, that if you did something wrong, your mother knew about it before you got home, and you were punished, you know. And the way they punished you made such lasting impressions on us, because I don't think my mother ever spanked us. She'd take a swipe at us once in a while, but she never really spanked us. And my dad wasn't around, but my mother would take us, and we'd go back to wherever it was that we had committed this indiscretion, and we would have to apologize to if it was property. And it, we didn't do bad things, because kids, you know, there was so much else to do that you didn't get into much trouble. I'm sure there were some, but not anything like it is today. But and you just never wanted to do that again, because it was so embarrassing to have your mother take you like you were a little kid. Of course we were, but it was that's a good lesson. And so, and I always used to think that too, because if you were over town and you got into trouble or were sassing and doing something, they would either give you a good spank on your behind or tell you, whichever adult it was, didn't matter. They all took care of all the kids, just like they were their own. And I miss that about today, because I don't think even parents are as involved in their children's lives as much as they should be. So. Mm-hmm.
So basically, that was pretty much when you were a child in the 30s, yeah. And basically pretty much in the 40s too.
Right.
Yeah.
It was wonderful. It was just a good time. All of us kids went fishing in all the creeks had fishing.
Mm-hmm.
You could fish anywhere. We had dug our own swimming holes. You could swim, even if you couldn't swim. And you played sandlot baseball all year long, you know. And like I said in my article a couple weeks ago, in the summertime you'd slide down the fire escape at the school, which we always got in trouble for, but couldn't resist it. But yeah, so it was a good life.
Yeah,
and still a good life, but it's just much different.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Okay, well, I'm going to steer you on to something else. I have all these questions.
Sure.
Now, I know where Six Corners is, naturally.
Right.
But is there any explanations or elaborations you could make on Six Corners?
On why it was called Six Corners?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it was called Six Corners because there were six roads that led into it and all went out. And just as Four Corners was called Four Corners down there on South Sherwood Boulevard where it meets Sunset, that was called Four Corners as long as I grew up, because it had four roads coming into it. Six Corners, same way, and six roads coming into it.
So Four Corners is the Sherwood Boulevard,
South Sherwood and Sunset.
So South Sherwood Boulevard and Sunset.
Correct. And that corner there, and there was a beautiful big white house there when we were growing up, and a banker lived there, so that was a nice place.
Mm-hmm.
And but that was Four Corners. And Six
corners, of course, that gas stations and markets and restaurants and feed stores, you know, things like that.
Yeah.
Because that was a main point for people coming into town, all those different areas. People would come there.
So, yeah. let's see. So there's Edie Road.
Uh-huh.
And
Sherwood Tualatin.
The Sherwood. Yeah, Sherwood.
Shoal Sherwood.
That's right.
And south, or north, Sherwood Boulevard.
And north, yeah. And north
Sherwood. And Sherwood. I think that should be 3 because there would be 6. Yeah, Shoal Sherwood. No, it wasn't. Edie Road really ran into Shoal Sherwood. So
oh, that's
Shoal,
right, because it kind of curved around.
Yeah.
So
it was Sherwood Boulevard, which went across the street into Shoal Sherwood, actually, and at that time. And 99, and then Tualatin Sherwood. Okay. So those were the 3 main ones coming into it. Then Tualatin Sherwood went across 99, became Edie Road.
Oh, okay. That's yeah, right.
That's where Edie.
Okay, because I remember there was that kink around the feed store there.
Right.
I want to get a map of that from, say, the 60s or the 70s, because it's so hard now for me to reposition my ideas on where all that was.
I don't think this one have that
things.
Very interesting.
Yeah, I think it is too. Yeah. I need to find the other picture so I can compare the other one. Hi there.
Hi.
How are you today? Good. Look around and if I can help you, just oops.
Whoa.
Oh, okay. We forgot about that.
Okay.
There you go.
There. I think I'd see them so low to the ground.
Well, that's usually my problem, but I still don't see it.
Okay, so we got the 6 corners and the 4 corners. I wasn't positive about the 4 corners, so I had to kind of figure that out a little bit. Okay.
Move to this.
Oh, okay.
That way we don't.
Okay, well, another question that the kids are going to ask me pretty soon, so I better get this straightened out in my mind, about Stella Olson in the park.
Mm-hmm.
Now, is this the same, I don't know, is this the same Olson family that,
Gas Pump Park?
No, it's not?
No.
Okay.
Rudy Olson was the person. In fact, it's funny because I just wrote my article about Rudy Olson's park. To set it up, yeah, sure, you bet. The Olsons that gave the park actually owned the house and the park that's on the corner of 3rd and Washington. Okay, so here's Washington, and here would be their house. Was right on the corner of 3rd and Washington.
Okay.
And her name, let's see, I'd have to look in that book. I can't remember what her name was. She and my mother were fairly good friends because they both did flowers for church.
Mm.
But so she and her family dedicated this first patch here for Stella. Oh, well, Stella, of course. That's mm-hmm. what her first name is. So I'm thinking to myself, and of course Stella Olson Park. And so that's why they named it that. But this part here was their old family. They owned quite a piece here. And so they donated that. Rudy Olson was down on every block.
And the Rudy Olson was not, that
no
was a
relation.
Okay. And there was a, and I'm trying to think of her first name, and I can't.
Esther? Rudy's wife?
No, I'm thinking of another generation.
Oh.
Would have been the lady who was the librarian at Hopkins for a long time. And Evelyn Olsen? Is it Evelyn?
I don't know.
Okay. I wondered if she was a relation.
I don't know.
I could find that out a different way. I'm just trying to connect connecting different people in the families.
I'm sure lots of other people donated property because Stella Olsen is really a pretty big part. But they were the first, I think, and that's why they designated that as Stella Olsen Park. So.
Okay. The kids are going to start doing this mapping of the trails.
Good.
At Stella Olsen Park. Good. And in fact, next week, they're going out to walk the trails.
Good.
I mean, these guys are so gung-ho, it's incredible.
Oh, isn't that wonderful? That'll be fun.
Now, you know where the playground is there in the park?
Mm-hmm.
Can you imagine if any of the, remember when A.Z. Hall built the lumber mill there on Cedar Creek somewhere in that vicinity, would any of that have been on the park grounds, or would it have all been mostly on the other side of the street?
I just don't think it could have been on this side. I think it would have had to have been on the far side. That's where the biggest growth of timber was too, of course, on that, all of that side.
Mm-hmm.
So I never really knew anything about where he had that. I knew he had a lumber mill there somewhere, but I didn't know exactly where. Now, the only thing that the city has told me over the years, whenever they've had to dig, because there's a wetland down there, so there's lots and lots of underground springs, which also makes me think he wouldn't have built a lumber yard there. It would have had to be over the other side and on a little higher level.
Mm-hmm.
But, and I don't know who did it, but somebody buried old hides on that side. And so when the ground would get real mushy and they'd go in and try and fix it, you know, because they got mushy because the spring water always bubbling up. They, when they plowed or anything there, or graded probably, they would grade up some old skins. And I always thought that was disgusting. Who would do that?
Oh, wow.
I don't know who did that. And neither do they, of course.
Huh.
So that could have come perhaps even from couple hundred years ago maybe or something, because there could have been an Indian encampment there, and that was just one way they got rid of whatever they didn't use.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. That just was a little intriguing.
Wow.
Question mark.
Because perhaps in that dip there, that might have been some sort of a log pond or something.
Easily.
Quite possibly.
Yeah.
One could imagine that, perhaps, and then with the rest of the, now what the creek go from the Stella Olsen side down that way, or does it go from this side of the road that towards that?
The creek comes down eventually, first one down the hill, and then it runs through Stella Olsen there and goes under the road.
Okay.
Right there at the park entrance, and then continues on.
So you conceivably that could have been some sort of a mill pond.
Could easily have been.
I was trying to envision what that was like, because that was, you know, way back in time, and possibly some of the first buildings could have been in that area.
It could have.
And I'm thinking, okay, what are some
what are some things these kids could envision being there historically over time? And that would be...
Well, I'm sure it was a natural encampment because of the way the topography lays, that people would have come there to camp and then to fish and eat, you know, and whatever. But then later on after that, it could have been, they could have put their logs in there or had their lumber mill close, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But there were a lot of Indians in this area, and I know that maybe what the kids think about is what place would be most logical for them to camp. And I know one of their big camps was on our old farm out there at the end of Sunset and Old Highway 99. So there were so many Indians camped there, and down to the edge of the creek. They camped all the way down that slope, that when we plow in the spring, we'd plow up arrowheads and pieces of pottery and odds and ends of things there. So I know that was one of the camp places.
Well, that's the kind of thing we're thinking about, what these kids could...
Yeah, questions for the kids.
Oh, good.
In the school.
Good.
And, but it wasn't... It didn't quite go back that far because I wanted them to be able to more readily identify place, like what's the oldest house in Sherwood, you know, and what was, how many historic buildings are in Old Town, and what were the original names of those buildings, and things like that. One of these days, in fact, what I really, really would like to see happen is on the front of any existing building that's old, that's say around 100 years old, to have a plaque with the picture, what it used to look like, and what it first was, and then any succeeding history. So kids could see that as they walk around town and
right.
pick up on a little bit of the history.
That's a real good idea. That's kind of what we're generating with the idea of the parks. It's,
right.
Another question that's come up is, when the brickyard was there, there was some talk in some of the historical pieces I've read about a grove of pine trees.
Mm-hmm.
And so I told the kids, that's one thing you're going to have to find. You're going to have to look. Can you see any grove of pine trees? Now, we know in 36 there was a grove somewhere. But where or in what? And then what got even more interesting was in Shirk's book, he's talking about the city park. Well, he's not talking about Stella Olson.
No.
It just dawned on me last week. Wait a minute. They're not talking about Stella Olson here. This is something else. So perhaps it could be that grove was...
It very well could be, because the baseball diamond was over there between Willamette and the railroad street. And there were pine trees over there on the back where I never saw, or at least I certainly don't remember the baseball diamond, but one of my older brothers played on the team.
Right.
And I know that's where it was. And there aren't any... I think there might be one tree left over there, but certainly not any grove anymore. But that's what they called the park at that time.
Yeah.
Where they played the baseball games. Because we had some pretty good players in Sherwood, and one went on, I know, and played in the minor leagues for a number of years.
Mm-hmm. So. Yeah. I just stumbled across Clyde List's website.
Oh.
And so I've been going through all the town meeting notes and all this kind of thing, sifting through.
Yeah, he's a great historian.
Yeah. He's done just so much.
Yes.
And then of course he's done it. The Lions have their little history thing.
Uh-huh.
And
And he did that, and that probably maybe got him started on this whole exercise, because golly, he's done a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
Which is, thank goodness somebody has.
Well,
because,
thank goodness is right.
You know, when I started going, oh my gosh, I'm almost out of material now. What am I going to do from the 20s through the 2000s? Now I'm going to have to start beating the pavement. And then I found that, and that helps me because it explained the city park, which I didn't quite understand.
Right.
Now, is there any scrap of land that you would still consider part of the city park over there anymore?
No.
It's pretty well all built up.
Yeah. The city has, I don't know if it's one of their wells or if it's something there on Willamette.
Yes.
That belongs to the city. And then Natural Structures is over there, and they build playground equipment and gazebos, things like that. And then there was another building over there that backs up to that same area that was called News or Newness or something like that.
Mm.
But they've gone out of business or sold and moved or something. And then Mr. Jones, Bob Jones, leases almost that entire rest of that property that the canneries were on, and he's got his huge building back there for car parts and truck parts and stuff.
Mm.
He ships that stuff all over the world.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's a big area back in there that is just industrial.
Yeah.
So.
And then the cannery area is just the next kind of block over there, or actually...
Yeah, but no, it's actually off of Oregon Street.
It's off of Oregon Street.
And the tannery, of course, has gone through a couple of metamorphoses too, but it's been a tannery as long as I think I remember. And
I was wondering.
And then there was a battery plant back in there, both of them, which absolutely poisoned that area. But you know, hopefully, one of these days they'll get that cleaned up.
Yeah, I remember the tannery. I remember that horrible
smell
back there.
Rotten eggs in the summertime.
Oh, that was amazing.
I couldn't imagine anybody working in there, but I guess after a while your senses get deadened to it.
Yeah, wow. I felt sorry for myself working in the cannery until I looked over there, decided, well, this isn't so bad after all. Yeah, that was... So basically, the tannery's been around since the 30s.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. How long, can you remember when they shut that down?
Well, that was just recently. Actually, a Japanese company bought it.
Mm.
And I'm sure that couldn't be probably more than 4 or 5 years ago. But finally, the city just warned the people, because those developers come in and build all those stupid homes across, I'm being recorded, homes across the street.
Yeah.
And, you know, the tannery was there for a long time. It provided a lot of jobs for people. It handled the hides from all the farmers and the people like that around. So it served a great purpose, because when it was built, it was way on our outskirts. There weren't any houses around it, maybe one or two farms.
Yeah.
But then, you know, when the building boom hit us and they started putting up a house on every square foot of ground around here, then the people complained, just like they are now. They're complaining about the shooting range out there. Well, that shooting range serves a big purpose. We need that. But here are the people building all these multi-million dollar houses next door to it. Don't like all the noise. And I just, you know, after a while you get to feel like
it is strange. Did you hear the rooster episode at Sherwood High School?
No.
Oh, this is great. Our ag teacher, thank God we still have an agricultural program,
goodness.
right?
Right.
And so he he has a great situation. In the spring, they do plants, and they have their huge plant sale.
Right.
In the fall, they do poultry, so they basically did rabbits and chickens.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they got a complaint from the police department that there were roosters crowing at the high school on Sunday morning.
Good grief.
And it woke up the people next door in the housing development. So they fined the school for disturbing the peace and having loud animals in the city limits or some
ridiculous.
Crazy things. And they had to take the roosters away.
Good.
So now they can only do quiet animals, so they can only do rabbits.
Isn't that silly?
That is really silly.
Well,
but,
that's the way things go, I guess.
But you would think that people moving into an area would take the time and trouble to find out what is around this house that I'm thinking of buying. Mm. Is this going to bother me?
Right.
And instead, they move in, then they find out, then they get mad, and they want it to quit.
Right.
So
change just, everything.
Yep. It's just goofy.
Yeah, it is.
So.
It's crazy. Well, let's see. Got the pine trees, okay. Baseball and the park. So, we're right now trying to focus a little on the park.
Mm-hmm.